This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So today's show is something that I've been working on for a while because it's something that everyone faces from time to time, and that's burnout at the workplace. I mean, anyone who has been at the same job for X number of years is bound to feel some form of fatigue if things are not kept fresh and the environment isn't robust and dynamic and exciting. And I figured there must be some pretty good tips out there on how employees can either prevent burnout or can come out of a slump if they are in one at the moment. So I did some research and I found out that a lot of these tips, right? Don't get me wrong, a lot of these tips were pretty good, but they weren't practical in a typical office setting or typical office environment. Like, I saw one tip from this author who said that employees should get creative at work and they should take mini breaks or do something fun, like a quick game or something in the office. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you know, sure, that sounds nice, but how many workplaces are gonna let their employees take mini breaks whenever they want and start playing games in the office, right? It just doesn't make any sense. Until I realized that the managers and bosses of an organization can play a more effective role at preventing employee burnout instead of the employees themselves. Which also makes sense from a professional standpoint, because less burnout means more productive days at the office. Everyone wins. Also, I'm going to do something a little different for this episode in the sense that I've collected explanations from some pretty good videos and podcasts, and I've trimmed them down to fit today's show. And the reason why I did this is because most of the best tips and explanations that I could find on burnout actually came from these videos. So instead of me just paraphrasing what they've said or saying what they've said verbatim, I figured I'd just let them do most of the talking. This is 5 for Fortune with Arvind Yuvaraj, and today's episode is called 5 Ways Managers Can Help Prevent Employee Burnout.
Number 1.
Okay, let's start off with the most obvious step for managers, and maybe even HR to some extent, and that's learning how to recognize signs of burnout. There's this really good video, it's a video essay hosted by Britt Garner on the SciShow Psych channel on YouTube that explains what burnout is, why it's difficult to detect, and how it manifests in employees. Have a listen, and I'll be back in a bit.
Broadly speaking, burnout, or burnout syndrome, is job-related stress. But exactly how it manifests and why is less clear. Some experts aren't convinced burnout is really its own thing, since it shares a lot of symptoms with things like depression, anxiety disorder, or chronic fatigue syndrome. But most agree that it has 3 main parts. The first is exhaustion, being super tired and emotionally drained. Essentially, after giving your all for a while, you don't have much left to give. Second is what psychologists call depersonalization or cynicism. You detach from your work and your coworkers or clients and have a negative attitude. And capping off the trio is a lack of accomplishment or efficacy. Mostly, this means you begin to doubt that you're doing your job well. How these 3 components come together to create burnout varies a lot, and it's still being studied. But a common scenario starts out with exhaustion, maybe because of a high workload or extra stress from other parts of your life. Then, because you're so tired, you naturally detach from the job. And these things lead to a sense of incompetence, which sucks and could even be real. Burned out people are less productive and are more likely to quit their jobs. In the United States, burnout isn't in the DSM, so it's not something a clinical psychologist or other expert can diagnose you with. But a few countries, like Sweden and the Netherlands, do classify it as a medical condition. And there, it's relatively common, like in an estimated 13% of all workers. Much of our understanding of the core parts of burnout come from a social psychologist at UC Berkeley named Christina Maslach. Shortly after Freudenberger started describing burnout, she decided that, to learn more, she needed to be able to measure it. So, with colleagues, she created the Maslach Burnout Inventory, a survey people could answer in about 15 minutes to see whether they might be experiencing burnout. When taking it, people rate how often they feel used up at the end of the workday, for instance, or how often they feel very energetic. And data from this questionnaire have revealed a lot of things. For one, psychologists had assumed that burnout only happened in jobs where you interacted with other people, especially ones that came with a lot of emotional baggage, like what Freudenberger saw at the health clinic. But studies over the last 3 decades using the Maslach Burnout Inventory found that office and factory workers, managers, entrepreneurs, and even soccer players have symptoms of burnout. You don't even need to have a job. Students also get burned out. That doesn't mean the type of work doesn't matter, though. Burnout appears to be more common in high-intensity helping professions like teaching and medicine. In some surveys, as many as half of doctors say they're burned out. But the point is, it's not limited to them. Maslach and other psychologists have found that what seems to be most important is how well matched a person is to their job. There are a lot of different metrics for this, including things like workload, reward, and mission. How important or helpful you think your work is matters. One huge factor is how much control someone feels like they have. Feeling not autonomous can push someone closer to burnout, while a longer leash can protect against it. Another is how much social support they have. People with coworkers they can trust and ask for help do much better with job stress. Now, you might expect burnout to build up over time so that older people who've been working longer and maybe have a family or other things to worry about would be more prone to it. But usually, it's the exact opposite. Burnout is more common in young people who aren't married and don't have kids. The idea here is that people who don't have partners and children don't have those loved ones to lean on when they have other stresses, which might make things harder. They may be so laser-focused on their careers that if something goes south in their job, it can really damage how they think about their self-worth. So burnout sucks, but knowing these patterns gives some hints as to what we can do about it. In the last decade or two, more companies have started to think about how to help by reducing hours, making employees feel more appreciated, and getting them more engaged with their work. There's no cure-all, but spending more time with your family and friends isn't going to hurt either. So maybe start considering your latest movie night or board game marathon with friends as a good thing for your job, too.
Head on over to the SciShow Psych channel for more content like what you just heard if you're interested in things like that. I found this really great piece on Fast Company as well that was written by HubSpot's Manager of Culture and Experience. Her name is Tamara Lillian. And she says that knowing when an employee is burnt out is pretty difficult and pretty hard. And sometimes employees themselves don't recognize the symptoms, so it's left unchecked for the most part until finally their performance suffers and they lose interest in their job and most times they leave. Pretty drastic stuff. So this is where manager training comes in, and it's also where HR can play a part to organize these workshops and sort of educational sessions so that recognizing burnout becomes a very real proactive initiative amongst managers.
Number 2.
Speaking of proactive steps, according to sites like Fast Company, one of the major contributors to burnout is the fact that some employees are constantly connected to work in some way or form, even when they're away or even when they're on leave. Paul Flaxman from the CASS Business School via the Memo channel on YouTube, he gives us some insight into what it means to be constantly connected and why it can cause burnout if it's left unchecked.
There's three things I particularly recommend that can help prevent burnout. First of all, I would say take leisure time and recovery seriously. So that would be making sure you have enough time for recovery so that you're not working too many hours, not working too much overtime. And also during your leisure time, not allowing work to encroach on your leisure time. So for example, resisting the temptation to answer work emails during your leisure time. My recommendation would be not to have work emails coming in on your personal phone. It's one way that I try to look after my own recovery by ensuring that I only check work emails when I'm at my laptop or at my PC. My second recommendation is that you do something different in your leisure time than you do at work. For example, if our work involves staring down at a screen, close attention to detail all day, it's usually recommended that we do something completely different in our leisure time. This is really important so we don't deplete those resources that we need for work. One problem that we find is that people who stare at a screen all day from work will go home and in their leisure time will perhaps log into Netflix and stare at a screen again for hours on end. A lot of it is about personal preference and awareness, but I think it's still important to recognize that you might be engaging in a very similar behavior that you engage in at work. And also, if you have your work emails coming through on your computer, you may be tempted to check those emails while you have Netflix paused. And if that's the case, really essentially you are still at work in your leisure time. Well, one activity that has been shown to be extremely beneficial for leisure time recovery is deliberate physical activity. So even workaholics who have an intense compulsion to work and feel guilty and anxious when they're not working have been shown by research to be relatively protected if they engage in physical activity during leisure time. So my third recommendation is to think quite carefully about the demands of your work, particularly the social demands of your work. So for example, if you have a job that involves a lot of socializing, having to have your game face on a lot of the time, It's good that if you are socializing in your leisure time, that you're doing that with people you feel most close and connected to, so that you can relax with them and you don't have to put on a show or put on a face. A personal example for me is attending academic conferences. Quite often in the evening there are social events, and I find that very exhausting because during the day you've got your game face on, you're talking to academics, and during the evening really I just prefer to have some time to myself so that I can recharge my batteries. Because if you take that time to recovery and replenish those abilities, those skills, you'll be more effective at the next conference or sales meeting that you go to.
Taking a day off means disconnecting from work and recharging. But when an employee is always connected, either physically or mentally, to their work, even outside working hours, then management needs to do something to figure out a more efficient way of organizing a task. It actually isn't that difficult. I mean, you know, what managers need to do is nurture a support system within their team. So this means that everyone either knows or is at least aware of what their teammates are up to, so that when one person is away, someone else is fully capable of stepping in and taking on the task, instead of, you know, forcing the person on leave to plug in and work on it remotely. Stick around, because we'll talk more about burnout after the break, and I've got some pretty good clips from some pretty insightful experts lined up. All that coming up after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we are back on 5 for Fortune. I am Arvind Yuvaraj, and we are talking about employee burnout and how managers specifically can play a very proactive role in helping employees get over burnout or just prevent it from happening in the first place. Moving on to number 3, let's talk about something that's very, very, very important in the workplace, and that's leading by example, and how leading by example can be such a powerful tool in tackling burnout in the office.
Number 3.
Here's another tip from Tamara Lillian via Fast Company. If managers want their employees to avoid burnout, then they need to lead by example. Kind of makes sense. It doesn't exactly inspire anyone to keep excitement levels high if their manager looks like he's on a caffeine crash first thing in the morning. It also doesn't inspire proper work-life balance if their manager is staying back at work until 9 p.m. on most days, or is working on weekends, or looking like their sanity is sort of hanging by a thread. Basically, if you never see your boss take a vacation, how good are you going to feel about taking one? It's a pretty simple office dynamic. And according to Fast Company, managers need to realize one very important thing, that they're prone to burnout as well. Everyone is, no one's immune. And if they don't take care of their own well-being first, it's going to be next to impossible making sure others around them are well taken care of as well. So in the end, it becomes a vicious circle. Leading by example of taking time off when you need it ends up benefiting everyone. Not only will it permit you the time you need to disconnect and recharge yourself, which boosts productivity, but also you're showing your team that it's an important thing to do and something that they should always consider. This also ties in nicely with the concept of being disconnected from work, right? When a manager is away, they need to set up an autonomous system at work that'll function without them. And this will, in turn, be a good example for the rest of the team. Employees will be able to learn through experience, as in they'll see how important a proper system is and how they're able to function on days when the manager is away, which means that the same should be done when they're away as well. The office should function as usual and the team should work as usual even if one person is not there. Again, this is where a healthy company policy also plays a very important part. Lots of these progressive companies nowadays, they encourage proper work-life balance as well, and they push their employees to take breaks in order to avoid burnout. Proper guidelines and support from upper management needs to be in place so that everyone knows it's okay to take breaks and recharge. And it all starts with the respective managers of each and every team in an organization. Anyway, let's move on to number 4. And for number 4, let's talk about Tony Schwartz for a minute. He's an author, and Tony Schwartz's New York Times article called Why You Hate Work was one of the most shared pieces of 2014. Now, Schwartz is the founder and CEO of something called the Energy Project, and he spoke to the crew on CBS this morning about how to improve job engagement. Now, here's the thing. I really like this clip because it's straightforward, it's blunt, and it gets a good message across, you know, without mincing words or beating around the bush. And the best part is it isn't repetitive. There are some pretty good nuggets of information here that I couldn't find in the other articles and the other videos. So I'll leave it up in almost all of its entirety for you to listen to, and I'll be back in a bit.
It seems like such an obvious thing. Be nice to your employees and they will work harder for you. But there really is a big disconnect, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got 200 years of employers trying to get more out of employees. The key to the future in a world of overwhelming demand is to invest more in them. So you free them and fuel them and inspire them to bring more of themselves to work.
But what are employers saying? How are they normally operating?
Push harder, do more, put in more hours, and work till you drop.
Yeah. And what's fascinating is you conducted this study with the Harvard Business Review, and you found that people are more engaged and more productive at work when they focus on four things. The first is renewal. What do you mean by renewal?
Well, in the face of demand, we need to offset that with recovering and renewing energy, whether that means taking breaks during the day, making sure during the evening that you're not continuing to work, having real vacations. All of that is a critical piece.
And can I just say this graphic right here? You say that employees who take a break every 90 minutes report a 30% higher level of focus, 50% greater capacity to think creatively. Charlie's a big supporter.
I totally believe this.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, is there any doubt that if you keep working for a long period of time intensely, your ability to focus diminishes? Yeah. And yet employers ask people to do that because they're counting hours instead of counting the output.
Mm. It's peak performance is what you're after.
Absolutely. You're looking at you're trying to understand what does it take to bring all of your skill and talent to life.
Second thing was emotional needs.
Yeah, so the emotional need, the primary one, is to feel valued. And the primary impulse of employers is to tell you what you do wrong. There's an enormous value in the simplest kinds of kindness, appreciation, respect. When you don't feel that, when your value is at risk, you can't produce value.
I know, thank you goes a long way, doesn't it? Mm. It goes a long way in all things.
All day long.
And focus. Focus is also.
So focus is under siege. We know that. That's the mental area. And so the ability, when employers can provide boundaries, when employers can provide the opportunities for people to be really on when they're on and really off when they're off, that changes their ability and capacity.
And then fourth, you say, have a sense of purpose for employees.
Well, to be able to define a purpose, for an organization to be able to find a purpose that individuals can align with, gives them the sense that what they're doing is matters. Nothing more in our study, nothing more significantly influences an employee's likelihood to stay in the job than that.
Okay, this all sounds really good, yeah. But how do you implement it? And how do you really force or encourage employees to do these things?
Well, look at these companies that are doing this so well. Take a Costco, which starts out by treating people better, by paying them twice as much as the average employer does. That seems like it would be impossible, and yet they save so much money in lower turnover and in training costs that it makes it possible. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that these are very, very simple. These are very, very simple things. They don't take a lot of money. They don't take a lot of time. They just take a lot of intention.
Your
they're
headline
fundamental
was,
is what they are. They're fundamental.
They're fundamental.
Treat people
they're
so, the way you would like to be treated.
Hey, if you're just tuning in and you'd like to catch up on the rest of the show, you can invent a time travel machine, head back to the past, and tune in at 11 o'clock on the 27th of April, 2018. Or you could just download the BFM app for free on the Apple App Store and on Google Play and stream it there. I'll tell you a secret, the app is way easier. Anyway, let's close the show with this very quick but pretty good management tutorial from lynda.com, hosted by Todd DeWitt. I picked this because, you know, it sort of gives managers a very easy bullet point style tip, or, you know, like a checklist, like note paper on what they can do. These very simple steps which will help them make a huge difference, and how they can engage with their employees and help them out. So have a listen.
Number 5.
Even people who work on amazing teams and love what they do can sometimes succumb to excessive stress, or what is sometimes referred to as burnout. Burnout is about exhaustion, emotional, mental, and physical, created by high stress and long hours. As you look at your team, ask yourself whether you've seen any of these signs of approaching burnout. do people claim they feel little control over their work or that their work is not being recognized? Are you hearing more about workloads and work pressure? How about employees who seem to be abnormally tired all the time? Maybe you've sensed increased procrastination or complaining. In the presence of these signs, if you don't act now and burnout sets in, the negative effects will spill over into all areas of your employees' work life and eventually their home life too. That doesn't have to happen. Use these tips to ensure your employees remain challenged but free from burnout. The first tip is simple, but it's the most important. Start talking. Ask your team members how they're feeling. Probe and pay attention to what they say and how they act. Don't assume they are okay or about to fall apart. Know the answer by having genuine conversations regularly. Next, consider ways to slow down. You can either slow down a little now, in terms of projects and deadlines, or risk being forced to slow down a lot later when the team hits its breaking point. Honestly, rethink the overall set of goals and projects the team is pursuing. When you really prioritize them, is there one or two that can be put on the back burner? If burnout is approaching, any little bit of breathing room you can create might make all the difference. Finally, be sure to provide needed support and resources. From a support perspective, this means helping you and the team stay connected. Use quick huddles, voicemails, and emails to share good news and keep people in the loop. It also means remembering to tell everyone thank you and that their work matters. Sometimes a few genuine and kind words helps to keep people calm and focused. Now, in terms of resources, ask yourself if you can find ways to make them laugh or become more efficient. Anything you do on either front is a huge hedge against burnout. Your job as the leader of the team is to push everyone to new heights, but you have to do it without causing unnecessary burnout.
That is all the time that we have for today's show. But before I go, I want to plug next week's show because we've got a very special GE14 election-centric episode next week. So be sure to tune in for that. I'll have a special guest with me in the studio and we'll talk about these very interesting, lesser-known facts about the Malaysian elections and our democratic system. Good stuff. Also, stick around for BizBytes coming up at 12 o'clock because we've got a lot of tech and business stories to keep you up to date. This has been Arvind Yuvaraj on 5 for Fortune, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.